Fasten your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. And it is about 6 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome to Route 51. Bill Martin's in for Glenn Moberg. It's Thursday, July the 2nd, 2009. And as the United States turns a young 233 this Saturday, millions of Americans are going to be celebrating with family, friends, fireworks, and of course food. In fact, the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council, how'd you like to work for that group, by the way? Says 150 million hot dogs will be consumed on the 4th. That's enough to stretch from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles more than five times. More than 7 billion hot dogs are eaten by Americans between Memorial Day and Labor Day. You do the math, that comes out to about 818 hot dogs per second. Ugh. By the way, July is National Hot Dog Month. If you don't like hot dogs, there's always burgers, brats, chicken, kebabs, fish, veggies, even dessert. Just throw it on the grill, maybe flip them once or twice, you know, move them around a little bit, and that's perfectly fine. But if you want to try something a little bit different, try using cast iron over some hot coals. A lot of campers do it, but that certainly doesn't mean that you can't do it in your own home or at your own home. We're going to talk about how easy that is and some of the many things you can prepare. We'll get into deep frying, cooking with a few utensils, because no one wants to clean up all those dishes, right? Cooking in a cardboard box of all things, and much, much more. And we want to hear from you. Let us know what's worked well for you, what hasn't worked, success stories, failures. You got any recipes? Any particular outdoor cooking memories you'd like to share? Lines are open at 800-780-9742. That's 800-780-9742. Or if you're in the Wausau area, 261-6371. My guest is Frank Larson. He's with the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America that's based in Wausau. He's been involved with the Scouts in a variety of roles since he was just 7 years old, and as a former teacher and trainer on outdoor cooking for many years. Good evening, Frank.
Good evening. How are you, Bill?
Not too bad. How about yourself, sir?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. It's all good. You're going to be using some cast iron this 4th of July, perhaps?
Perhaps. On Sunday.
Okay, we'll see how you feel, right?
Yeah, we're going to a parade on Saturday, so...
Okay, good deal. Popular thing to do on the 4th. Certainly, you're no stranger to cast iron. What do you like about it the most?
I guess I like the fact that it's very similar to using your oven at home.
Too much difference?
No, you can control the temperatures, especially when you're using charcoal briquettes, because mm-hmm. each briquette puts out a certain amount of heat, and so you can devise a little formula to get yourself the right amount of heat. You can set the heat just like you do with the dial on the stove at home.
Well, not quite that simple, though, is it?
It really is quite simple if you have the right Dutch oven. It's just a certain number of coals under the Dutch oven and a certain number on the top, and you maintain those coals for the period of time that the particular recipe calls for, and you got success.
All right, well, we'll get into that in just a little bit, but what kinds of food work, I should say, are there foods that work particularly well in a Dutch oven?
I guess that's the versatility of a Dutch oven, because you can do everything from hors d'oeuvres to main courses to desserts. I mean, it's across the board. You can bake a cake in them. You can bake a pie in them. Cobblers are real popular. You can do ribs, roasts, chicken. It's just across the board with a Dutch oven.
Yeah, the list goes on. Does anything not work real well with a Dutch oven?
You know, I haven't really run into anything that didn't.
Really?
I've always, all the things I've tried have worked very well. Started out using established recipes and then have moved to some of my own recipes, and even converted some recipes that I did on the stove at home to the Dutch oven.
Okay. Can you use the same Dutch oven that you do in the kitchen, or do you need to get a special one since you're talking about, you know, putting coals directly on top and under these things?
Most of the Dutch ovens that you buy for at home have a rounded lid with a handle, and they have a flat bottom. The best for cooking out of doors and using a Dutch oven out of doors is one that has three legs on the bottom that are about an inch and a half or so raise the Dutch oven up about an inch and a half or so, and then you have a raised lip around the lid of the Dutch oven. And that way you can put coals underneath, and you can put coals on the top. They're not going to fall off, and it's very easy to control. Plus, you can lift the lid to check to see what's going on with whatever recipe you're trying to cook.
Sure. You can find some as cheap as $20. I've seen some Dutch ovens cost as much as hundreds of dollars. Can you do just fine with, you know, one of those $20 jobs?
A lot of times the cheaper ones, you pay for what you get. They're not as effective. Sometimes the materials in them are not as effective. And they also have a tendency to crack a little bit easier if you vary the temperature with, for example, get some water on them or whatever. It's better to kind of be in the middle of that range you're talking about. A good Dutch oven that's cast iron is $50, $60. An aluminum Dutch oven can run you a little bit more than that. Aluminum has a little bit more constant heat than a Dutch oven, and it cools down faster.
Be lighter, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if you're going to take a trip, or say you're going to go up to the Quetico or someplace like that where you're going to be backpacking and you really want to take a Dutch oven, the aluminum is going to cut the weight by far. It's just a matter of the aluminum isn't going to rust like the cast iron does, and it doesn't need to be treated the same way. Cast iron needs to be tempered before you use it. It needs to be conditioned using some kind of oil or fat that will help condition it and keep it in shape.
Okay, so for $100, I mean, just throwing a number out there, you should be able to get a pretty good Dutch oven for less than $100, right?
Oh, yeah. At $70, $75, you can get an excellent 16-inch Dutch oven for outdoor use, and you can probably get the utensils that go with it and a trivet that you can use inside when you want to bake something inside to suspend whatever that item is so that air circulates around it.
You said 16 inches. Is that about as big as you need?
16 is probably the biggest most people need. A lot, 10, 12, 14, 16, those are the base sizes. It just depends upon how many people are involved. A 14 usually feeds about 6 to 8 people. And that's another thing you look at when you get a Dutch oven is, you know, how many people am I going to feed and how much am I, you know, how big are my recipes?
Okay. Some Dutch ovens are glazed. They're glazed and kind of smooth. Others are left kind of rough. Is that texture, that surface, an important difference?
Really not. If you've tempered your Dutch oven beforehand, in other words, you've put some oil in it and you've baked that oil in and then wiped out the excess and you've kept up with your Dutch oven like that, using that kind of a process, no, you're not. It won't really matter if the surface is smoother or if it's rougher. Certainly if you get a food that's burned on, when you have a rougher surface, it's going to be tougher to clean.
Sure, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. You're listening to Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Bill Martins, filling in for Glenn Moberg. Our guest is Frank Larson from the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America, talking about outdoor cooking. Let's just talk about that seasoning, the cast iron now. Describe what exactly that means and why that's so important to do it.
Well, many of the Dutch ovens now, when you buy them, and I'll mention a brand because it's probably the most popular, it's Lodge. They come pre-seasoned. They've already got some kind of a fat that's coated the inside of the Dutch oven, and you can actually begin cooking with it right away.
What does that fat do?
The fat really it goes into the iron itself. It's absorbed within the iron. It helps with the taste of the food later on. You can use a PAM spray if you want to eliminate a lot of the fat. You can use a PAM spray as well as using butter or margarine or something else. The margarines have a lot of water in, so I usually stay away from them. I usually go with an olive oil or a butter or a PAM spray. And it keeps it conditioned so that you're ready to cook, and if you're using the right temperatures, then things are not going to stick.
Okay, is that really... Okay. Is that really necessary to do? I ask that because for Christmas a couple of years ago, I received a cast iron skillet, and it was one of those glazed, smooth ones, you know, and all I did was wash it out before I used it for the first time, obviously wash it with some soap and water afterwards, and I didn't do any sort of seasoning with it, and it seems to be fine. So is this something that has to be done or maybe not?
Well, the one thing about cast iron is it's porous. So if you take cast iron and use soap on it, some of that soap is going to get into the cast iron. And then when you cook with it, that soap's going to come out into your food.
That's why my eggs taste like dish soap the other day.
Exactly.
No, it didn't happen.
Well,
I get the point.
but you really don't want to put soap in cast iron. You want to stay away from the cleaners. Basically, what you're going to do is you're going to wipe it out. And if it gets really gunked up, you take the Dutch oven, fill it about two-thirds with water, and heat it up until the water almost comes to a boil, and that will loosen up just about 90% of what's there. And then you go in there with like a plastic a chore boy or 3M pad, something like that, not steel wool. You don't want to use steel wool because the steel wool will scratch the surface and make it more porous.
Right.
So
let's say you're putting on a demonstration for all of us here. How do you set up your cooking area? I mean, does the Dutch oven sit right on a, you know, on a cooking grate above the flame, or is it nestled in a pile of charcoal? Or, I mean, how exactly is that set up?
Well, I've gotten to the point where I do what I refer to and what's referred to in the vernacular as leave no trace cooking. I actually have a table that's 36 inches off the ground, and it has space on it for two Dutch ovens. And I also have an old galvanized oil pan. And I take a charcoal chimney, I put it in the oil pan, I put paper in the bottom of the chimney, fill the top up with coals, light the paper on fire underneath, and what the chimney does is it creates an intense heat that gets that charcoal going. And then I have a kind of a spatula tong thing that I bought. Pinches together like a tweezer kind of a thing, and one side has got a spatula on it, the other side is a tong. That way, as the coals get hot in my chimney, I can lift up on the chimney, the coals fall, and I pick the coals out, and I put them underneath the Dutch oven and on top of the Dutch oven. So basically, I'm not harming anything. I'm keeping it all up off the ground because heat getting down in the ground burns quite deep into the ground and will destroy the vegetation for a number of years that way. So I'm doing it with a table. You don't have to use a table. You can actually just get some concrete blocks, and you can put your charcoal chimney on a couple of them, and then have a couple of them that you're going to put the charcoal on to set your Dutch oven down on top of. And that works quite well, too, is to have patio blocks or concrete blocks to put things on, just something that's not flammable.
Got it. All right, well, we are talking with Frank Larson of the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America based in Wausau. After the break, Frank is going to give us an easy recipe for cobbler, so we'll have dessert taken care of, and we want to hear from you, 800-780-9742, or if you're in the Wausau area, it's 261-6371. What are your cookout plans for the 4th? You got any grilling or outdoor cooking horror stories? We'll take your success stories as well. Or if you have a question for Frank, give us a call. I'm Bill Martins in for Glenn Moberg. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
You're listening to Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Martin's in for the vacationing Glenn Moberg. He'll be back next week. We are joined by Frank Larson of the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America to talk about a few different ways you can cook outdoors. Frank, you've been involved with the Boy Scouts for quite some time. I got to imagine they must really enjoy learning how to do this.
Yeah, they do, because it's a big change from what goes on at home for most of them. Everybody's in a hurry and everybody's in a rush, and it's a lot of microwave stuff. And maybe if there's a couple of good dinners during the week that are baked or cooked from scratch, that's about it. And the rest is kind of on the fly. So when they get on a camping trip and they get a chance to make their own pizza or make their own cobbler or make their own main dish, it's a new experience for a lot of them, and they find it to be a lot of fun. They have fun before we go out picking out the recipes and then figuring out what ingredients they need and going to the store and buying the things they need, splitting the cost up between them, and then doing the prep when they get out on the camp and making the food that they need.
Sounds like a great way to get the kids involved in the 4th of July festivities. Tell us, I mean, just real briefly, how can they get involved in the Boy Scouts?
The Boy Scouts, we have many troops throughout the Samoset Council. Basically, we spread all the way from the Adams Friendship area all the way up to the Michigan border by Land O'Lakes, and from the west, the Park Falls area, over to the east, the Antigo area. And they can contact any of the local unit leaders with the Boy Scouts, usually through the churches and schools. Otherwise, they can contact the Samoset Council office on Camp Phillips Road here in Wausau, in Weston, actually, and they can provide information. Plus, there's a very good website. The Boy Scouts of America have an excellent website, as does the Samoset Council. They both can be found just by Googling.
Samoset.org, I believe, is the Samoset Council's website. That's Samoset.org. We were talking a little bit before the break about charcoal and how they, the kind of temperature that they can give off and how you know how hot your fire is. What's the general, I guess, rule of thumb? How many briquettes give you so many degrees? I mean, that kind of thing.
Well, part of it depends upon your recipe, and part of it depends upon the size of your Dutch oven. I work off a regular chart that I have. For example, if I have a 12-inch Dutch oven and I'm making a cobbler, for 300 degrees, I'm going to put 15 on the top, 15 briquettes that are white, and 7 on the bottom. Because in the Dutch oven, with many things, you want the greater heat to be on the top and circulate downward with the oven.
So you said you have a chart for this. Is this something that people can download online someplace or pick up somewhere?
Yeah, there are several places they can go. One of the places that I spend a lot of time is looking at recipes and stuff is a thing called Black Pot Demos, which happens to be a group. They're located in Oshkosh, and they have a very nice cookbook. Lodge has a real nice cookbook that has similar information in it. The Boy Scouts in their scout shop. You can not only buy the Dutch oven cookbooks there, but you can buy a Dutch oven there, and at very reasonably priced.
We mentioned also a little bit about dessert, certainly the favorite part of the meal to a lot of people. If you're making a cobbler in a Dutch oven, there's really not a whole lot to it, is there?
No, it's really pretty simple. It's just a matter of, one of my favorites is a cherry pineapple dump cake, we call it. And it's just a matter of pulling the cake mixes and the butter and the cherry pie filling and pineapple together along with some 7-Up or white soda and brown sugar. You put the, usually we line the Dutch ovens when we're doing a dessert because sugar has a tendency to burn a lot quicker than other things. So we'll line it with foil to make our cleanup a lot easier. And if we have non-stick foil, it only usually takes one layer. Otherwise, we use two layers of the heavy-duty stuff. You pour in the fruit. You pour in the 7-Up. You spread the cake mixes evenly over the top of the fruit. You put the butter pats on there evenly around. You sprinkle the brown sugar evenly over. And if you want to, you can put some nutmeg in there or cinnamon in there and put on the cover. And cook away.
Now, how many people will that serve?
In a 12 or a 14-inch Dutch oven, that's going to feed about 8 hungry scouts, or numerous adults that have smaller appetites,
or one Frank Larson or Bill Martins, right?
Yeah.
Now, we have a couple of recipes actually posted on our website, wpr.org/route51. We have a recipe there for crunchy top cobbler, basically a couple cans of fruit pie filling, some couple boxes of cake, and the rest of everything is listed. It's very simple. Give it a shot this weekend. You're listening to Route 51 again on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Martins in for Glenn Moberg. Frank Larson is our guest. He's with the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America. I want to touch on this a little bit, Frank. The U.S. Fire Administration says each year 6,500 grilling fires cause nearly $27 million in property damage. I'm sure you and all your scouts are experts in this particular category. If you're out there in the woods and you're camping, you're using some of this stuff, I know it's not necessarily grilling, but what's the best thing you can do to keep safe and not burn the forest down?
You need to really have an area where you can do the kind of cooking that you need to do. You need to have a durable surface, and you need to make sure that what you're using for that fire, you're going to be able to put out. And this is a case where smaller is better. The smaller we get with fires, with grilling, with even with the charcoal that we would use for Dutch oven cooking, it's better. It's one of the reasons why we don't use the liquid fuels when we do the charcoal. Not only do you take the chance of spreading a fire, because people often like to, the charcoal's not going quick enough, I want to put some more on. It also changes the taste of the food that you're going to eat. So that's why we stick with the charcoal chimney, which is about the size of a number 10 can. In fact, you can make a charcoal chimney out of a number 10 can.
Right.
Very, very simply, and not have to spend the $12 or $14 to buy one. And you can really contain things that way, and it really doesn't take a lot of extra equipment or a lot of extra work to do that. But
as I said, those are definitely nice to have. Hey, just one quick question, because we've got about a minute left before we go to break here for some news. But is it true that if it's particularly dry out, which is not necessarily the case right now, but the charcoal briquettes, even after you put the fire out, they can still set a fire well after that?
Yeah, but if they're on the ground, especially any fire on the ground, because the things for many, many inches and even feet underground will actually burn. There's all that organic material there that the heat from the fire is going to affect. So you have to make sure that you really douse it with water and really get down there. I know people will say, well, if I walk away from a charcoal fire, it'll just go out by itself.
Right.
The charcoal might go out, but everything that it's contacted may start a fire.
Okay, we're talking with Frank Larson of the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America. They're based in Wausau, and you are listening to Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My name is Bill Martins. I'm filling in for Glenn Moberg today, and Route 51 will return right after the news.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Rutabaga, the paddle sport shop, sharing the experience of serenity found on Wisconsin lakes and rivers. Instruction for all ages and abilities with test paddling every day. 220 West Broadway in Monona or on the web at rutabaga.com.
Nice to be back in North Central Wisconsin talking about cooking this 4th of July weekend, specifically outside. We spent the first half mainly on cast iron over some hot coals. What's your favorite way to cook when you're not in the kitchen? Is it with a Dutch oven, maybe just the regular grill, or perhaps it's a cardboard box? No joke, our guest is Frank Larson of the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America, which is based out of Wausau. You can ask him a question or share an outdoor cooking tip or recipe of your own by calling 800-780-9742, 800-780-9742, or if you're in the Wausau area, 261-6371. Frank, honestly, I have never heard of this before, but when I looked it up on Google, I certainly found no shortage of websites on it. I was in Cub Scouts for a couple of years, but we never got into cooking with a cardboard box. It seemed weird to have hot charcoal and a paper product together, but apparently this works okay.
Yeah, it works great. It's a matter of, again, having some kind of a durable surface. Patio blocks work real well, and then have like an 8.5 by 11 cake pan, an old cake pan, and that's where you put your coals. And you take the cardboard box and you cover it in aluminum foil inside and out, and you make yourself.
And that's the key, right?
Yes, the aluminum foil is what's going to reflect the heat inside the oven, and you make a door on one end. Not on the top. You don't want the heat escaping from there, but on one end you make yourself a door, and you want it to fit fairly tight. You can even go so far as to cut a hole in the door and take one of the cooking bags, the plastic cooking bags like they use for turkeys or chickens in the oven, and cut a piece out of it and put it in and make a window so that you can actually look in the oven to see what's going on in there. And
then, lose any heat if you do that?
A little bit. But it's not that much, because those bags are made to hold the heat in.
Gotcha.
And then we use just some coat hangers, because they're rigid enough. We put those across to make our rack so to speak, halfway up in the box. And then we'll take an aluminum pan, usually a pretty thin one, less like a serving pan. And that's what we'll put the food item on and slide it in there on top of those coat hangers that are across the box. Close the door. You got your coals in the bottom. And you just take a peek once in a while and check them out. One of the most popular things that we do is a pizza that's made with English muffins. You use the English muffin, put some pizza sauce on it, put whatever toppings you want on it, and you put a bunch of those in. Usually you can fit, you have a box the size that fits about a dozen that you bake in there.
Well, that sounds very good right around dinner time right now. So perfect if you don't have or don't want to spend more than, say, a couple of bucks on your equipment.
Yeah, it's real easy and very inexpensive.
I mean, there's got to be, I'm just thinking out loud here, got to be limitations as to what you can cook in a cardboard box. I mean, what sort of thing is this cooking method really good for? You mentioned the pizza bagels there. Anything else or anything that it really is a bad idea to use a cardboard box for?
If you're going to get into doing meat, the cardboard box generally doesn't hold enough heat to do meat, although I've seen fish done, very thinly sliced fish, and I've seen a lot of cookies. Things like that, baked things that you would do.
Can you use that box more than once?
Oh yeah. You can use that box many, many times. You just keep it covered in foil, and a little duct tape works good to hold the foil on.
Excellent. Duct tape does everything.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I even read on one site that if you don't have a box, you can still cook if you can find a few sticks to pound into the ground, wrap them with foil to make the sides, then drape a piece over the top. It doesn't seem to get much more basic than that.
It's a simple reflector oven is what you're talking about, and they work great as well. It's just that you have to look at how much time it's going to take. I know one of the things I always used to like to do as a kid was making bread on a stick. And that's simply finding a rather stout stick about 3 feet long, and on one end I'd put some foil on there and mix up some Bisquick with water and make it a dough consistency, and then have it no more than about a half inch thick, and just make it like a rope twisted around that stick. And then put that over the fire, and every once in a while turn it, and in about 20 minutes, depending upon the heat of your fire, you got bread.
Excellent. Not a bad idea there. You're listening to Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Martin's in for Glenn Moberg, and our guest is Frank Larson from the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America. If you don't have a box, just grab a bucket and a whole chicken, and you can actually have yourself a feast. So how does that work?
Yeah, chicken in a bucket is a lot of fun, especially for the kids. It's just, again, you want that durable surface, you want to put foil down on the ground, and you want a good sturdy steak. I usually go over to Menards and get some steaks, the wood steaks, pound a steak in the middle in the ground, coat it with aluminum foil, and then you slide your chicken right down over the top of it, over that steak, through the cavity in the center of the chicken, and I usually truss up the legs and the wings with some string, just some heavy cotton string. And you got to make sure you got the steak in the ground far enough so the bucket isn't going to touch the chicken. And I use a non-galvanized bucket. It's a milk pail is what it is that I picked up at Fleet Farm. But you can use a popcorn tin, a candy tin, any of those kinds of things that are big enough that the chicken will fit inside. And then you're going to go on the bottom around the rim where the bucket is on the ground. And you're going to put three or four rows of coals around the bottom, and then you're going to go up on the top of your bucket. And that's why I like the milk pail, because the milk pail has a little ridge on it. So it holds the coals on top, and you put a bunch of coals on the top, and you let it bake.
Okay.
And you got baked chicken, and you can season it any way you want to, and it's great.
So is it fair to say that pretty much any sort of cover for your food can work as an oven? You know, I'm thinking a big flour pot or maybe even a big aluminum bag if you happen to prop it up in the middle, give it a little bit of height.
Yeah, as long as it's not something that's flammable. Aluminum you have to be careful of, because when that does get into high heat, if it's not thick enough, it will melt. So you need to have something that's not going to be flammable. And you need something that's not going to change the taste of your food. That's why I said a non-galvanized bucket. a galvanized bucket. When it heats up, that coating will almost melt, and then that the odor of that permeates your food.
You know, I made some fried chicken not too long ago using some peanut oil in my, you know, just a 5.5-quart stock pot on the stove. Turned out very well, I must say, and was pretty painless to make. But any way I could do that again outside without having to buy some giant, you know, 700-gallon, $900 deep fryer?
There are a couple of ways. One of my favorites is either using a tripod. That's what I prefer, and it can simply be some stout poles that you get. It could be some of those garden stakes that you use to, metal garden stakes you use to hold plants up, or even short fence posts. And you make a tripod out of those, and you hang a string down the center, which you truss around a chicken. And all you have to do is build your fire under there. You take the chicken and you twist it. You twist that string. Mm-hmm. And you twist it up as high as it'll go, and then you let it go. And it will continually turn like a rotisserie, just hanging there on that string. It'll go one direction, and when it winds up on the other side, it'll go back the other direction.
Sure.
Usually you might have to wind it up one more time, but it'll go for a long, long time, and you can cook just on a tripod like that.
Wow.
Very simple way of doing it.
Yeah, I guess. What do you do with all the oil when you're done deep frying?
I recycle mine. Mine goes to a recycler.
Okay.
I will use it more than once if there are going to be a couple of occasions close together. I'll refrigerate it and then I'll use it again. In fact, I've used them up to 3 times when I've had events close together, but then I recycle it. And
okay.
Most of the cities will take the fry oil, plus there are people that are using it in their vehicles.
Yeah. But definitely what you're not supposed to do is just dump it, right?
Exactly. You don't want to dump it. And some of the new fry pots, if you have a turkey fryer, they have a regular faucet on them that you can actually, once it cools, you can put the oil right back in the container it came in and then recycle that.
And how much do you need to spend to get a half-decent deep fryer?
You know, it varies. I've spent as little as $30, and you can spend up to $100. If it's not something you're going to use very often, I would check around at rummage sales and that sort of thing, because there are people who have tried these things and don't like to do it. They don't like messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have them for sale for a fairly reasonable price. Dutch ovens the same way. If you check around at rummage sales and stuff, you might find yourself one. I've actually got 3 deep fryers that I use when we go out and we're going to do group things so that we can do different things. If I want to do wontons, I can do wontons in one, and I can do French fries in another, and then I can do egg rolls or a main course, say it's fried chicken or something else in a third one, so we're not mixing those foods. And I get into that because a lot of people with allergies, you have to stay away from the peanut oil for a lot of people, and it depends upon what you're cooking. You don't want to mix the things together. Plus, they cook better when you do them separately.
800-780-9742 is the number you can call to get in on the program and talk about some of your outdoor cooking stories, some of your tips, recipes. Maybe you have a question for Frank Larson of the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America. That's 800-780-9742. Or if you're in the Wausau area, the number to call is 261-6371. That's 261-6371. Frank, I love to cook, but the thing I hate the most about it, I think, is the cleanup. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to wash like 5 trillion things when I'm all done, especially if I'm on vacation. So are there any kinds of foods that work best if you only want to have to deal with, you know, say 1 or 2 things?
Yeah, there are some things that work really well. The old-fashioned tinfoil dinner, where you're going to have a chicken or a beef, usually a hamburger, some vegetables, some potatoes, some seasoning, and you're going to seal that up real tight, and you're going to just put it right in the coals. I like to do baked onions. A lot of people don't like onions, but they find that a baked onion is really good. I take a mixture of bread and some margarine and some spices like you would make a stuffing for a turkey or a chicken. I hollow out the onion to put in the stuffing, wrap it in foil, and just plop it in the fire. A walk-around salad, we have a recipe for that in the recipe book I have. That it's simply a cored apple that you put in peanut butter and jelly if you want. You can put raisins in there, a cinnamon and sugar if you want to with raisins. Mm-hmm. And again, you wrap that in foil, and you can throw that in the fire. Or if it's the peanut butter and jelly one with the raisins, you can eat that just cold, just as you're walking along, as you're hiking along. And we often suggest you throw in a celery stick, because that acts kind of like a fork or a spoon, if to take the center out, to eat the center. If you want to, a lot of kids like to eat that first, and then they eat the apple.
Yeah. Any must-have accessories when you're cooking outside?
You need a good pair of heat-proof gloves. That's one of the things that I always have available, and not just a mitt for one hand. You really need to have gloves for both hands, and then you need some long-handled utensils so that you're not getting so close to where the heat is. If it's a deep fryer, you don't want to be getting too close to the deep fryer, so long-handled spiders, as they're referred to dunk in and pull things out of the deep fryer are really very important. Plus, you want to have something that you're going to put on the ground that's durable. A lot of the with the deep fryers now, you get a mat you can put on the ground that actually absorbs any oil that splashes out, and then it doesn't get on the ground, and you can just roll that mat up and use it again over and over again.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we are going to take our last break. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show for you to get through and tell us what's on your menu for the 4th. If you're interested in trying one of these other methods we've talked about today, or if you got any outdoor cooking nightmares or success stories to share, 1-800-780-9742, 800-780-9742. If you're in the Wausau area, 261-6371. I'm Bill Martins in for Glenn Moberg, and this is Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Bill Martins in for Glenn Moberg. Our guest is Frank Larson of the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America. Hey, Frank, what's your favorite thing to make when you're cooking in the great outdoors?
I guess I really like to make egg rolls and wontons and crab meat rangoon. Those are the kinds of things I like to get into, because the kids, that's something that they really like once they see how it's made and see what's in it. We set up a little assembly line, and they assemble the things and put them together, and then they're able to cook them. You can deep fry them in an iron skillet. You don't need a turkey cooker to do that or a big deep fryer to do that. You can do it in a Dutch oven, cook in a Dutch oven.
Tell us a little bit about how you do wontons.
Wontons are pretty simple. It's just a matter of I use ground turkey, and I use some chopped up Napa and some garlic and some ginger that are chopped up. They're all mixed together. I use some rice wine vinegar in there, a little sesame oil.
And Napa, by the way, that kind of Chinese cabbage, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
All of this is chopped up together, and I usually mix it beforehand. So we just take it along, and then they just spoon it out into the wonton skins and fold up the skins and drop them in the hot oil. And within minutes, they've got a meal, and it's something they really enjoy. And it's something they usually only get when they go out to eat with their family. It's not something that's regular fare usually at home. So
it's sort of like a dumpling.
Yeah. That's exactly right. It's got a dough skin on the outside, and then it's got these ingredients on the inside. The other way we'll also make them, instead of frying them, is we'll heat up some chicken broth, and we'll drop them into the chicken broth. And they cook very quickly in chicken broth. It's a little bit less fattening, although the kids, the way they chase around and the activities they're involved in, I don't think the extra carbs and the extra fat bother them too much. They're all pretty skinny. but it's just another way of making them instead of frying them.
I got to ask you this. I was hoping we'd have a one or two calls today with people telling this kind of story, but you ever try to make something that just went horribly wrong, you know, like a peach cobbler that blew up or something?
No, I can't say I've had anything blow up, but I've had a couple of instances where I've had scouts come to me on the side and say, you know, Mr. Larson, could you show us how to make a cobbler? Because that other guy, he burns them all the time. And they just aren't very good. Or the other kids in the patrol, they burn them all the time. They cook them too long. So yeah. Can you show us how to do that? And that's really the biggest disaster is when you get things burned and then it just doesn't taste very good. The other thing is with winter camping, you have to be a little bit choosier with the kinds of ingredients you take along. For example, if you're going to take eggs and it gets down below freezing, well, you don't have an egg anymore. You've just got a frozen white thing that looks like a small snowball. So, you know, you
have an egg fight, perhaps?
No, we haven't gotten quite that far, but gotten pretty disappointed. And I said, well, there's a way to fix that. We'll boil a pot of water and drop the eggs in there, and we'll have hard-boiled eggs.
There you go. Make lemonade out of a lemon, right?
Exactly. There's a solution to fix most of the things unless you burn something really bad. Then it's a lost cause.
So don't be afraid to try.
Exactly. That's what it's all about. That's why I like working with the youngest kids who are coming in, the 11 and 12-year-olds. I get them into the wontons and the egg rolls. They look at that and they think, oh, man, I can't do this. And we get them through the process, and they taste it, and they see how good it is, and it's like, gee, that really wasn't hard at all. That was pretty easy. Even the cleanup was easy. You know, and then it gets them thinking about other things that they might want to try and might want to do. Kids usually aren't too worried about the cleanup part except who's going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. What's the best part about cooking outside, you think?
I think it's just being outside, and also it takes me, it's a throwback for me. I learned a lot of my cooking from my grandmothers, a Norwegian grandmother and a German grandmother. And the German grandmother still had a wood stove when I was 14, so I got to sit and watch them cook and learn a lot of tricks and lessons from them that I can apply when we're outside, because you're working over a wood fire or a charcoal fire, similar to what they did, and it's a challenge that's different than taking the meal out of the box and putting it in the microwave and setting the time and then eating it afterward. And things taste better outdoors. I think food just tastes better when you're outside.
I know what you mean. I think I would tend to agree with that. Again, everything we've talked about this hour is not necessarily just for those who happen to be camping out. I mean, this can be done in the driveway or if you've got a burn pit in the backyard.
Oh, yeah. All of this stuff can be done right at home. I mean, with a Dutch oven, with the charcoal, as long as you've got that durable surface to put the charcoal on, the hot charcoal and stuff, you can be cooking right out in the backyard. I love going out camping and doing ribs, for example, barbecued ribs, with the Dutch oven, because it's just a matter of getting the coals underneath and throwing the ribs in there and putting the barbecue sauce in there and put the lid on and let it go. And you don't have to futz with it. You don't have to spend any time looking at it. And you got a great meal.
If people want more information on how to cook outdoors, whether it be regarding recipes or supplies, cooking methods, where can they look?
I think the best way is to look on the net. There are lots of different recipes and lots of things that are in the public domain. The Boy Scout office out on Weston Avenue is another great place to go, and because they have quite a few cookbooks there, and they're reasonably priced, $5-$6 for a cookbook that covers quite a few recipes and quite a few parts of a meal. And the other thing I would do is if you know somebody that's involved with scouting that's going out, ask if you can come out and visit and see what they're doing, see what they're cooking, and find out what's going on. I like nothing more than to have parents come out or visitors come out and see what the boys are up to and see what they're cooking, because I'll run the younger boys through this once or twice, but then it's up to them. They have to do the cooking from that point on.
Sounds like a plan to me. Hey, Frank, it was great talking to you today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your program. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, and a happy 4th to you.
Same to you, Bill.
Thank you. Frank Larson is with the Samoset Council of the Boy Scouts of America. He's a former teacher and instructor on this kind of thing for several years. For more information, again, on the Samoset Council, that website is Samoset, SAMOSET.org. Don't forget about Route 51's website, WPR.org/Route51. And a rustic road, I guess you could say, on the web. I'm Bill Martins, in for Glenn Moberg. Thanks to Rick Ryer, Scott Clark, and Kelson Quisler for their help in getting the show on the road. I'm Bill Martins. Glenn will be back next week. Happy 4th of July. I'm out of here.
Until we meet.